Hey, everybody, and welcome to EdSoul, a podcast for educators by educators. Each episode, we bring you insights, techniques, and strategies rooted in research that you can put into practice in your classroom right away. I'm your host, Rachel Logan. Hello, soulmates. We have an exciting opportunity and episode to bring you today. If you are a science, technology, engineering, or math teacher, or any teacher that loves a great opportunity for some hands-on, real-world, critical thinking and problem-solving, then you are in the right place. I am joined by experts and fellow educators, Christy Berg and Liz Gillis from the Minnesota Zoo. Welcome, Christy and Liz.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
And they both have really fun animal backgrounds that I just want to point out. And I'm wearing an animal print shirt, so we're getting very into our theme today here. So I'm going to give you a brief introduction to both women, and then we'll hear from them directly about what they do and why they do it and how you can be a part of the fun. So first, let me introduce you to Christy. Christy is a former 6th through 8th grade science teacher who now works as the Minnesota Zoo's STEM specialist, where she coordinates STEM learning opportunities and professional development and hands-on learning experiences that we are going to hear more about in just a moment. And secondly, I'd like to introduce you to Liz. She is also a science teacher with experience teaching in and outside of the United States. Liz also works for the Minnesota Zoo as the lead to their school and teacher programs that include the Zoom's STEM Design Challenge that we are going to dig into and so much more. So I know there's a lot more of experience and backstory to both of you. As I was reading your bios, I was thinking, holy smokes, these women have like a huge wealth of experience and knowledge to share. So some of that might come into our first question, but before we dive into our official questions, is there anything else that you want to add to that introduction?
Oh, not that I can think of.
All right. Well, let's get to it, as we say. All right. So when I meet with guests, I always like to ground us in our why and start with kind of how you're personally connected to the work you do. And so share a little bit about, let's hear about your why connected to our topic today. Who would like to go first? Christy?
Yeah, I can go ahead and answer that question. Yeah, so obviously working at the zoo, it makes it very easy for the why with the, I mean, animals are so great. But coming from an education background and being a teacher, I mean, we do it for the kids and for the students and for the teachers. A big part about working at the zoo is supporting them and creating experiences that are going to inspire them and creating real world, authentic learning opportunities for them to apply what they're doing in the classroom when they come to the zoo. So really, it's for them and to make sure that we're supporting them the best that we are able.
Nice. Thanks, Christy. How about Liz?
Yeah, my why starts a long time ago. I'm from a family of educators. My mom's a professor of education. My sister is a teacher. And I've always wanted to teach. But for me, I wanted to know whether teaching in informal or formal education felt right. So I actually went to Panama and did both when I was in the Peace Corps and learned that what I wanted to do was to support teachers because I believe that teachers and schools are the center of community and that environmental action and that environmental education is really an important thing for communities right now as we grow. So I really wanted to find a place where those two things intersect. And I've found that at the zoo. I used to bring my students to the zoo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it feels like everything's come full circle. And like Christy said, the mission is so important. And it's wonderful to know that we're helping teachers meet their classroom objectives and helping kids to get inspired.
That's so as I was poking around on the website, too, because I'm like, I remember bringing kids on the field trip to the Minnesota Zoo as well. And great memories of that. But it's like, and there's so much more. And I was looking through all your programming, and I will link to those websites and anything that you mention and anything you don't mention. You can just go poke around on there as well. We're going to zero in today on the Zoom STEM Design Challenge. But I was just like blown away by like how many teacher supports there were there. So feel free to add anything else that connects to our conversation today. But let's just start with the Zoom STEM Design Challenge. So you just celebrated 10 years. So congratulations on that. Can you share a little bit about what it is, how it got started, how it's evolved? And then, of course, we want to know how we can get involved, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, 10 years has gone by so fast. This all started from a grant from 3M to kind of kick off STEM learning at the zoo and creating, like I said, opportunities for teachers to use the zoo as a context for learning about STEM through animals. And through even just the staff that we have here, Zoo Careers, we have our staff use STEM on a daily basis. And so this program, Zooms, pretty much was born in 2014. And a big part of that was the Zoom STEM Design Challenge. So creating real world problems for kids to solve, guided by their teachers. So we pretty much kicked it off by training teachers. Learning about the animals that their students are going to be solving for, whether that's enrichment design, so creating opportunities and choices through items that kids can design that we can provide to the animals that keep them active and healthy, or designing exhibits or redesigning exhibits, which because it's something we also have to consider when we're balancing animal keeper and visitor needs. And so these were two challenges that we would then have students solve throughout the school year, create projects, and then submit them to us for consideration. And we would invite them to a culminating exhibition at the end of the year. And so it has grown from, I want to say we started with 24 teachers in its first year. And now we're at about 131 teachers that we just wrapped up in our 10th year. So I think it was a total of 5,200 students. So yeah, it That's is amazing. Kind of skyrocketing. Yeah, it's we're really proud of it and just the growth that it's had and the teachers that just keep returning and getting their fellow teachers on board and recruiting for we barely have to do anything. It's been kind of amazing. And Flint Hills Resources has been an amazing partner in this program as well and helping us to grow it too. And then to answer that other question about how you can get involved, we always choose a new animal focus or a new challenge every single year because we're always solving problems and we always need new ideas and inspiration. In May of this year, we will announce next year's design challenge for the school year. So, and it is a completely free program for teachers to participate in.
Liz, did you want to add anything to that? Like you're taking a real life issue or a need, right? And then kind of like pitching it to students like, hey, help us. That's so cool. That's yeah.
And then they're pitching it back to us, to the real people who are going to use these ideas and implement them in real life. Yeah. So then they come to the zoo. They present the ideas. The zookeepers, the head of the zoo, walk around, hear their ideas, get inspired. And then we began the process of continuing to plan for these exhibits. And these ideas are important and they are inspiring. And the kids do think of things that we haven't talked about before. It always amazes me because we spend so much time and planning on exhibits and enrichment. Mm. But you can get a third grader who just has this amazing insight into what an exhibit should look like or what would be fun for kids to see when they come to the zoo. So it's just really inspiring.
That's incredible. And I think about, you know, when you think about reluctant learners or students that might feel unmotivated, there is nothing more motivating than an authentic learning experience with a real audience and a tangible outcome, you know, to see like, I could be doing something to help animals at the Minnesota Zoo. I can't think of a more engaging hook, you know, than having it connected to something that they could really see come to life like that.
We've had many stories that teachers have shared with us exactly about that. And I mean, just animals in general. And also a big part of this is kids learning the actual real animals that we have, their names, their personalities, and they get connected to these animals and build empathy for the wildlife in a whole different way, well beyond what we are expecting to. So it's been really cool to see.
So you just wrapped up your exhibition? Is that what you said? Your final?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So what did you see? I'm just curious, like what were some of the end products and what did that look like and sound like?
Yeah. So this year was focused on the bison and our black-tailed prairie dogs. Our black-tailed prairie dogs, obviously both of these species, they are more managed by our zookeepers as a group. And so when we provide enrichment or when we design their exhibits, we have to consider that and how they work as a herd or a colony. And so kids have to think about how to incorporate that into their design. And so they're designing these structures that all of them can use at once. Bison, they love to rub their bodies on things. So kids were coming up with these like scratching posts, obstacle courses where they could work their way through. I mean, I'm trying to think things that could hang from trees that would drop their favorite treats, you know, if they they love to just ram their huge skull into things. And so they're trying to find opportunities for them to do that within their habitat as well.
Well, and so correct me if I'm wrong, because when I was reading on your website, the idea of enrichment was new to me because I wasn't thinking about it. So, I mean, from what I understand, but please fill it in. You know, since animals are not in the wild, they don't have the same sort of like inputs or, you know, their food is brought to them. So they're looking for ways to like stay fresh, engaged, curious. I don't know. What is it like? What can you tell a little bit what an enrichment piece would be for a herd of bison?
Absolutely. So every animal at the zoo, we try to enrich in some way, but it has to obviously encourage their natural behaviors. So yes, we want them to be able to do those behaviors that they would be doing in the wild.
Sure, you're not they teaching might just them be... tricks.
Correct. Okay. We are providing with experiences that help them to recreate that instinct, that use that adaptation, whatever it might be. So for a bison who literally uses their head to kind of shove their way through the deep snow, how can we recreate that? They also wallow, you know, to help keep insects. So rolling around in the sand or dust, whatever. And that helps them to, that's a survival strategy, but how can we provide that opportunity within their space as well? So if an animal digs, we want them to be able to dig. If they are curious and playful, we want them to be able to play and use those. So we do it in so many different ways, and we do it differently every day. So, and it just creates something new and exciting for the animal each day to do. So it keeps them mentally engaged and happy and active by having these experiences.
Nice. New learning for me right there. It's more than just feeding them, right? Feeding and caring for them. So what would you say is kind of the primary goal or mission of the Zoom's STEM Design Challenge?
And then Liz, feel free to jump in. But basically, I mean, through the Zoom's challenge, we want to, I mean, ultimately inspire these students to show that if you want to work with animals, you know, you hear young kids. I mean, I know I wanted to be a dolphin trainer when I grew up, as most other people did. if you want to work with animals, you need these STEM skills. You need problem solving, creativity. You'll use technology. You'll document so much data is involved with caretaking of animals and saving wildlife. And so if kids want to see themselves in these future careers, we want to inspire them and show them that they can do it and it's possible, and hopefully inspire them to want to do that and to be a future conservation biologist, zookeeper, and just have the next generation ready to save wildlife.
Yeah, I'll just add that we know that meeting someone who does a career and understanding that it is and seeing what that looks like actually makes a difference in the types of careers that kids can pursue. So that's why it's important for us that they meet zookeepers, that they hear from the head of our bison conservation unit about what we're doing with conservation, that they talk to people who also aren't zookeepers at the zoo and talk to other engineers, like the engineers at Flint Hills who come and are judges, so they can really understand all the opportunities to use these skills in the future and be able to see how they can be applied in a context like the zoo.
Nice. Yeah, well, like you, Liz, I came from a family of teachers too. That's what I saw, right? And that's what I did. And so sometimes we just don't even know all the career opportunities that are out there. So our Minnesota teachers have some shifts coming in their science standards. And if you look at the next generation science standards for Minnesota, there's an emphasis on the integration of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM, which is what we're talking about today. So I'm wondering if you can help us know and learn how the Minnesota Zoo education programs can help support teachers in providing experiences and learning opportunities around those state standards.
So we have a lot of people who work at the Minnesota Zoo in our education department who, like Christy and I, come from a formal education background. So we're very aware of the importance of standards and we're very aware of the changes and initially did a lot of mapping to try to figure out how our programs fit into these state standards. So we have resources for the teachers that are available on our website. We have curriculum that can be downloaded and used in the classroom at school. We also have some activities that can be done here during field trips to the zoo. We have a new idea that we're working on at the zoo called field trip stations. And what happens is when you come to the zoo on certain days, we have set up activity booths of certain themes. And there is a STEM themed week where there's a bunch of STEM related ones. There's one on local conservation. There's one on global conservation. So we're really trying, and that is not no extra cost. We're really trying to provide that as an opportunity to learn for students and for teachers. So then we also have the Show Us Your Muscles Challenge, which is another free initiative. And muscles like it's muscles like the freshwater things that are underwater, the cleaner water wise, not our biceps.
Okay.
But yeah, that's for middle school and high school students. And that is also supported like the Zoom's STEM Design Challenge. So we provide resources, we provide training. And it's really a competition to create digital projects that talk about water quality and how to improve it and how to improve the life of mussels in our freshwater ways. So we have a lot of resources like that to really support teachers. We've been talking a lot at the zoo about the fact that biomimicry is one of the things that's in the state standards and has moved a little bit from one grade to another.
Okay.
And how best to support folks in being able to teach about that. So biomimicry is when we get inspired by animals in order to do our own engineering or design solution.
Sure. Yep.
And so we have some classes at the zoo that are themed like that and also some other ways to support teachers with that as well.
I am just thinking, I've learned a lot about that through, I have a child that really loves the Wildcrats. So I've learned all about mimics through him, through, you know, some of those animal education experiences. So sorry, I just had a flashback to Wildcrats when you mentioned biomimicry. That's so great. And a lot of those, I mean, all those downloadable pieces are free. Free resources.
Yep.
I mean, I think people love a free goodie. So thank you. Christy, other thoughts to add to that? Along the standards piece? Or?
No, I think we do our best at trying to listen to teachers and find out what they need and what they want and what they're hoping to have more support on. Mm-hmm. And I think, with these new standards being changed, I'm hoping that we can also provide that support and whatever teachers are going to be adjusting their curriculum. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of classrooms being switched with teachers teaching new grades because of it. So I think, we are here to support them. We just want them to know that.
I think, whether you are a general education teacher, you're in an elementary classroom and you're teaching multiple content areas, or if you are in a specialized content area, either way, we know those standards are overwhelming and it can feel like, how in the world am I supposed to know all of this? And I think we can't, right? So that's where we don't have to know it all and be the expert of everything when we have great partners, that we can lean on to help us support in some of those new areas. So that's really fantastic. And I'm just thinking, I was teaching in Bloomington Public Schools over 10 years ago. And so I'm like, oh, I missed it when I missed the Zooms challenge. I need to go back because I don't think it was in existence yet. But so shout out Bloomington Public Schools if you're listening. So many ways, or anyone. Actually, let's talk about that. Our regional schools are in central Minnesota. What about our schools that aren't metro based?
The great thing about Zooms is it's incredibly flexible. So even if you're not a classroom teacher, we've had, even homeschools, we've had after school enrichment clubs take this challenge on. But the nice piece about it is we provide so many resources to make it so that you can see these animals, learn about them, check out videos, look at the space. We train teachers, and so we do a virtual training for teachers as well as in-person training at the zoo in the fall in September. So yeah, we've had teachers kind of across the United States. We even had someone from Hawaii and Australia sign up. So it's really expanded, kind of crazy. But yeah, we are here to support kind of across the board.
That's amazing. So no matter where you're listening from, there's an opportunity for you. So you had mentioned already that this year you focused on the bison and the prairie dogs, so two species that call Minnesota's geography home. And I noticed on your website that you had some collaboration with the Shakopee Midwakanton Sioux community on your conservation and restoration projects. Can you share a little bit about what that collaboration looked like?
Yeah, so that collaboration, it has been for a while with the Minnesota Zoo, and we're very proud of it. And it's really looking at how we manage the herd of bison. But then we've also been working with the tribe as well to figure out the design, layout, and interpretation of the new treetop trail. So we just took our, if folks don't know, we just took our giant monorail track that goes around the entire zoo and turned it into the largest elevated walkway in the world. It's 1.25 miles going around the top of the zoo with a beautiful aerial view of the bison exhibit.
Oh,
and that
awesome.
It's really beautiful. It's really pretty. It's a nice walk in nature, and it's a nice way to experience those Minnesota animals that are out on that trail as well. So we, one of the things with planning for the building of the treetop trail was the putting together of an advisory group of community members to help really make sure that we were thinking about the end use of the trail and also how we would tell the story of some of these animals that are native to Minnesota and so important culturally. So that was part of the building of the trail and part of the management of this conservation herd, which is, we call the Minnesota bison conservation herd. It actually is several different sites where we have bison that are all managed together. And so you might have seen bison that are technically part of that same conservation herd in other locations like Spring Lake or some of the other parks. So we do that with the Midwakanton Sioux as well as with the DNR or some of our managing partners.
How have you been able to, in working with your various community groups, been able to lean on Indigenous wisdom when it comes to that environmental conservation and restoration efforts?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that has been important is always asking with resources and always checking resources to make sure that they are culturally relevant and that they should be used, and checking where they come from has been really important and part of our process. I think it's also really important to go back to tribes and learn from them. There's been some great opportunities for educators through the Midwakanton Sioux. Like, there was an opportunity to actually do some mini grants from learning through the Minneapolis Foundation, which was an exciting opportunity. I think it's already closed, but if they open it again, I think everyone should go for it.
Right.
So I think that really it's going on that journey of individual learning and reaching out to appropriate places in order to get that knowledge. And then being really mindful as you incorporate what you learn into your practice.
So, yeah, like I said before, standards and legislation are not really words that, you know, jazz people up a whole lot or is like, let's talk about that. However, we have had some environmental ed legislations recently passed that has that impacted your work, and or how has it impacted your work and educator support?
Yeah, so it has impacted our work in that there is right now, previously and currently, a focus really on outdoor education and nature education. And the Minnesota Zoo is the largest environmental education center in the state. So really, that is part of our mission. And that is something that we are working towards, is to connect more people to nature. So, for example, right now we're working with folks from the Governor's Children's Cabinet. They're talking about the Outdoor Bill of Rights and how to work on some initiatives to support that. So that's been really exciting to see such large groups of people and organizations get together and talk about education in nature, and also about getting as many kids as possible out into green spaces. So for us, we're just excited about the direction that things are going. We have kind of a unique relationship to legislation in that we're a state entity. So we're actually, mm-hmm. Christy and I are actually state employees, mm-hmm. as part of. As,
I noticed that in your email address.
So, but it's really exciting to see with the growing like concentration on like nature preschool and nature play and getting outdoors and really the investment in it. Mm-hmm. We're excited to be part of that. We know that that is important for the well-being of children overall, especially going out of these pandemic years. We want kids to connect to each other and to nature and to basically like start on their journey to become conservationists, to think about the future of the world together. So it's an exciting time to be in environmental education. I mean, there's a lot of doom and gloom as well, but it's also there's a lot of opportunities.
Nice. Well, and I'm just borrowing some of your words here about formal education, which don't worry, I'm not going to go down the path of like, what is learning? But I love the idea of being able to think about bringing some of these standards to life outside of the four walls, you know, outside of your desk, outside of your building. You know, how can we, that's the beauty of the standards is it, you know, it has the what, but, you know, leaning on some of those resources that you have as the how can really make that exciting and engaging. So anything, I mean, we yeah. started with zeroing in on the Zoom challenge, but are there other programs or things that you want to highlight that we could get involved with connected to our conversation today, or just something really great that you're like, you need to hear about this, that we can connect educators to?
Yeah, we actually have a new program we're going to hopefully be piloting this starting this summer. We already have some pilot teachers that are going to be joining us to help with that, but it's open to any kindergarten through fifth grade teachers. And a big part of why we're focused on that group is because of a lot of the organizations sometimes of where classroom teachers are supported by a science specialist and just how do you get kids outside?
Yeah.
So there's that nature focus that we're really trying to support teachers with. How do you lead learning outdoors? Mm-hmm. And so at the Minnesota Zoo, we have a turtle conservation program. So we have a turtle conservation biologist that is working to save endangered Minnesota turtles, like, for instance, wood turtles from road mortality. I mean, they're facing so many challenges, nesting predation. I mean, so water quality issues. And so we have this program called the HERP Project, which is meant to inspire these kids to really explore their local surroundings at their school. So they have a local wetland, you know, how do you explore that? What can you learn from it? So really guided through inquiry, having teachers, training teachers to help guide their students through and creating some sort of conservation action-based mm-hmm. project where they identify some way that they can help their local wetland or their outdoor space, and how can they improve it and make it better for turtles or other wetland wildlife that live in their own in the backyard pond at the school.
Right.
So so that will be coming up, and teachers will be learning all about turtles and learning and getting some tools that they can figure out how to guide their students outdoors.
Will you share information that I can include in our show notes so people can find that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who
yeah. We have a training coming
turtles?
Up in June.
Okay.
Yeah,
perfect.
And our turtle conservation biologist will be part of that training as well. So the teachers will get to connect with an expert and kind of take that back to the classroom with them as well.
Amazing. I had a question come into my mind. I'm sure you've heard this before while you were talking about getting kids outdoors. What do you say when people say, well, we live in Minnesota or any other cold climate and say, wow, we can only get outside for, you're both shaking your heads no.
No.
What are your thoughts around outdoor learning and the elements or the weather?
There is no bad weather. There's just bad gear.
I have heard that.
And that is said by most. We run a nature preschool out here at the Minnesota Zoo from the farm. If 3 and 4 year olds can be out in the elements, properly dressed, enjoying looking at tracks, going on sledding adventures, and naming all the trees, so can adults and so can older kids as well. And so it really is making that investment in and really asking questions to kids, like understanding that different kids have a different level of tolerance for cold. So you have to check in. understanding that you have to build up tolerance over time. Mm. So you have to do smaller bits of time leading to more time. But it's just so much fun to watch kids notice things out in nature and to connect to animals that they didn't even realize were in their own backyard. Mm. So we would really encourage everyone to get out all times of year. And this winter hasn't been that bad. Well, so right. Really,
there are no excuses for this winter.
And there's still plenty to observe in the winter. A lot of people think like everything goes away and it's not going to come back till the spring. But there's plenty of action happening.
Yeah. Nice. Especially at the zoo. At the zoo, many of our animals, since they're more cold tolerant, come out and play more out in the snow in cold times. Our snow monkeys and our sea otters, some animals are very active.
So it's not just the spring field trip to the zoo. We can come anytime.
Yeah.
Great. Any other programs or connections that you want to share?
I would just like to highlight for folks, because this is something new that we started a couple of years ago, and I don't think teachers are aware, but we actually changed what our model is for admission to the zoo.
Oh, okay.
So now if you have 85% or more free and reduced price lunch students, you get in for free. And if you
have your whole class goes for free.
Anybody from your school who is coming on the field trip gets in for free.
Oh, wow.
If you have between 50 and 85, it's half off our group rate. So that's $3 or $4 a child. And then anything below that, like in terms of free and reduced price lunches, then that's our group rate that we used to have before. So that's $6 or $8 a child. So that has changed a lot. So there are a bunch of schools who I don't think are aware that they could go on a field trip for free in terms of admission. And then since we have those field trip stations on select dates, there's programming already set up for you to do that is part of that free admission. So I'm just trying to make sure that we get the word out that we want you to come for free to the zoo and have a wonderful field trip. I really feel like the Minnesota Zoo is like an educational playground because there's so many opportunities to learn. And it's a great big outdoor classroom, essentially. Mm-hmm. And we're excited that hopefully people will learn more about these programs and make it to the zoo.
Do you ever have schools that come multiple times in a school year?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I'm just showing my own like mental model is like the one trip to the zoo that happens in May. But how do schools use it on an ongoing or a multi-purpose visit?
I was going to say with Zooms, we've had some schools that have come back multiple times. And a big part of that is when they're coming to observe the animals and notice the animals they're designing for. So they might do some observations about their behaviors and track that data. Mm. So they might want to come back later and see, has anything changed with their behaviors? Has there been any unexpected things or just to gather more data or to take a class? We do also have zoo classes as well that help to not only support the design challenge, like our animal enrichment class or zoo exhibit design, but we also have so many different topics that schools can come that can support different educational goals that they're hoping to. So there's so many possibilities of how they can use so many more than one visit.
Yeah. And we do have virtual programs for folks who are farther away who can't make it. So we do have virtual tours if people want to visit the zoo without coming to the zoo. And then also the same classes for folks who are a little bit further away.
Sure. So just back to the Zoom's design challenge, are there certain criteria or guidelines that participants need to adhere to when they're designing their projects?
Yeah. So,
collecting data and observing, and I'm thinking, what else? What are some of those criteria pieces?
Yeah. So the Zoom's design challenge is for kids in grades 3 through 12. And based on their grade level, we have kind of different specifications essentially in their project that we ask for them. Obviously, it increases our challenge, I guess, as they get older. But generally, all the groups that sign up, we all ask them to work as teams because collaboration is a big part of mimicking what it is like to work at a zoo and sharing and combining ideas. So we ask that they work in groups of 2 to 4. And as they are going through and starting that process of learning about what the challenge is, we basically ask them to document their engineering design process. So while they're going through it, they recognize that this is what an engineer does And they're going through it through the perspective of a zookeeper or zoo exhibit designer when they're coming up with these design ideas at the zoo. So we want them to really follow that process and to document what were their ideas, what was their research, how are they going to approach solving the problem, how did they arrive at their final design, how does their final design work. We also ask them to think through measurements. As with our middle school and high school, we ask them to scale. We provide them with real actual zoo blueprints that they can actually use to scale their own models. And whatever features they're adding in, we ask them to also think about the real world measurements, because they're thinking through every possible problem. How high should that tree be? You know, how far away from the fence should it be for safety for our animals and our guests? So they're thinking through every possible thing using technology. So really, we want to hear their whole engineering design process from start to finish. And then we also add conservation connection as kind of the end of it, is what are they inspired by? What did they learn about conservation as it relates to the species as well?
Nice. Well, I feel like, you know, if you are listening, there is, you can come in person, you can come virtually, you can participate in a challenge, you can download the lesson plans, you can come and use a exhibit that's set up and ready to go for you. You might have free admission. I mean, thank you so much for getting the word out about all the ways to support teachers, especially if we think about connecting to science standards that might be new, or challenging to create, you know, maybe you were like, I don't have a activity for that. To have a partnership with the Minnesota Zoo, to look to the two of you and your team to help make that real world learning come alive. Appreciate that.
Totally.
Well, before we go, I always like to ask, we start with kind of bookend questions. So anything else that you are reading, watching, or listening to that you would like to recommend to our audience is primarily educators, but you never know, could be more folks out there. It could be connected to your work or just for fun. And I'll share it and link it.
Well, I always like, right now, I'm kind of really diving into birds lately. And if teachers, we're talking about getting outdoors in a really easy way that I've accidentally got my whole neighborhood hooked on, it is the Merlin Bird ID app. So you literally can have the app out and listening to birds outside, and it'll tell you exactly what you're listening to.
Oh my gosh.
And it is addictive. So download it. It's free. You'll start to learn, you know, your backyard birds. And yeah, also, if you haven't been following the Charlotte the Stingray news, I've been really following her closely. What's going to happen with that? Yes. Check it out. Look it up.
Oh, thank you for those. How about Liz?
Yeah, so I am actually staring right now at my large stack of books that I want to read and haven't gotten to yet. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I've reading through very slowly is we got a conservation and diversity, equity, and inclusion list from a network we work with. And so the one I've started so far is called Saving Us, a Climate Scientist, Case for Hope and Healing in a Divided World. So that's one that I have started. And the next one on my list is actually about environmental racism and the history of that in the United States. It's called Clean and White, A History of Environmental Racism. That's the next one. I haven't read that one yet, but the one I've started is very good.
That sounds like that would be a whole nother podcast episode. Yep. I'll have to invite you back for. Yes, talk about. Yes, yes. That sounds very a needed topic. So, all right. Well, I appreciate you both taking time out of your day to chat with us and share your programming. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for chatting with us.
Thank you so much.
That's all we have for this episode of EdSoul, a podcast for educators by educators. If you are loving the show, make sure you share it with a friend. Your personal recommendations are powerful. And if you really love this show, we would love it if you could rate and review us within your preferred podcast app. Your ratings and reviews will help other people discover the show and benefit from these great strategies as well. Check out our show notes for a recap of this episode and a list of resources mentioned or referenced.
If you're a social media type, connect with us on Facebook. Search Education Solutions Educators Group and request to join. If you're an e-newsletter type, you should subscribe to our education e-newsletter by emailing us at education@sourcewell-mn.gov. The e-newsletter goes out monthly and includes updates and events for our local educators. Special thanks to our Sourcewell Education Solutions Office Support Team and Multimedia for your production support. This podcast is brought to you by Sourcewell. Sourcewell is one of 9 service cooperatives in Minnesota. We are a self-sustaining government organization that partners with schools, local government, and nonprofits to boost student and community success. Learn more at mn.sourcewell.org.